news, reviews, commentary, not just another podcast. Are the Ordinary Pickleball Broadcast.
It's funny, these people, they go to sleep. They think everything's fine, everything's good. They wake up the next day and they're on fire.
Now here comes your host, Kyle A. Barron of the World Team.
Welcome to the Big Ball Broadcast. This is episode 71. My name is Kyle Hebert, a voice actor from Los Angeles. You can hear me as Omegasis on Mega Man Star Force on Cartoon Network and on your PSP as Kiba on Naruto Ultimate Ninja Hero.
And this is your co-host, Otherworld Steve. I'm a musician, up-and-coming author, jack of all kind of different trades, and here with Kyle on the Big Ball Broadcast.
That's right. It's been a few weeks since we've had a full show, but we did post a new Perimeter of the Void song. We got some feedback on that. We're going to get to that shortly here. This week, got some news. How to kill a PS3. Aliens versus Predator will be attacking your PSP. We got a game release calendar. Transformers is getting bigger, literally. Jurassic Park 4 jumps the shark. More remakes. Oh, thank you, Hollywood. The iPhone problems may get worse. YouTube subpoenas Colbert and Jon Stewart. And Metallica versus Guitar Hero 3, George Lucas Land, 17-year-old overdoses on coffee, and many reasons why it's great to be a guy. Now, if that isn't entertainment, I don't know what is.
That's a lot of stuff.
That is a ass load of news, as Steve is often quoted as saying.
That's a making up for no podcast for 2 weeks amount of stuff.
Yeah, pretty much. So I've been, I went to Houston, Texas one weekend, and then Edmonton, Alberta, Canada the next weekend. What have you been doing?
Well, first I got to ask, how was Canada?
Canada was like amazing, eh? And everybody, no matter what size, shape, color, or creed, they all had that accent, eh? Hey, what's this about?
Was it like being in America?
It was like a weird alternative reality America because, you know, you'd see the signs for everything and they'd be English, but occasionally something would have a really weird name and some stuff would be in French. And again, everyone with the accent, just bizarre. And then, of course, you know, the Monopoly money. I say that just because, you know, they've got, you know, this brightly colored money. It's like, wow, is that real? And they go, shut up, America.
Did you come back with any?
Actually, I did. Not any dollar bills, though. I kept some change.
One story I like to recount from time to time is the tale of my first visit to Texas, my first ACON ever. We were hanging out in the lounge area, and we had all had a few. And Scott McNeil came and joined us. And Scott, being from Canada, definitely had some Monopoly money on him. And when paying for his drink, the group saw Scott's wonderful Monopoly money. So later in the night, some people at the table wanted his autograph before he left, and nobody had any paper. So Scott thought it would be a funny joke to actually sign Canadian dollar bills and hand those out. And then, you know, super collector Monopoly money.
That is awesome. Yes, we love Scotty. And if you're Canadian, we don't mean any offense. Actually, I had a wonderful time. But what was shocking was the weather. It was cold and rainy, and I didn't pack for that. So I'm used to, you know, summertime. It's hot here in the San Fernando Valley. And in Texas, you know, it's hot and humid. But Canada, oh my gosh.
Well, you know, you think you know that, you know, Canada and cold are kind of synonymous.
They are. And the days last longer, too. It was almost 9 p.m. before the sun went down.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Not north enough to see the northern lights, though, right?
No, didn't see any northern lights. But, you know, like Starbucks is on every corner here. Up there, it's Tim Hortons.
Ah, yes.
So everyone's like, hey, you want to go to a Tim Hortons, eh? I'm like, no, I'm good. What's that about? So.
You almost made Arizona iced tea come out my nose.
That's a shame we're not a video podcast.
No, huh? Never.
Yes. So, Canada was great. And what have you been up to, dude?
Let's recap some of my ongoing projects that never want to die. I'm still working on the book. Still coming along. I could still use some help from some people at some point. I need a Chinese translator, believe it or not. I need somebody to translate some handwritten Chinese notes that I have. So if anybody knows Chinese, let me know.
Yeah, thebigballbroadcast@gmail.com, please, in the serious inquiries only, because this is a serious project, and we want it to be good, you know?
And you get serious credit in the book, so hey.
Nice. Okay, so you're working on the book.
Yeah. The band. Band's a never-ending story. I'm actually managing, quote-unquote, another band right now. The name of the band is Slamo, and those in the know that that comes from Star Wars Episode One, a term of endearment used. So I'm working with them, getting their stuff out there. Really cool band. Formerly The Hams, the group I was a member of. And, of course, we got Perimeter of the Void. And hopefully in the very near future, we're actually going to have a 5 or 6 song EP available for sale. Working very hard on that. Again, I know in this digital age, the music's available on MySpace, and we're going to have pay for MP3 downloads available soon, too. But there's really nothing like hearing it on a disc, so you can really hear that higher bit rate and all the damn hard work we put into it. Recently, a very cool project I got involved in from running my big mouth a little too much. I'm actually on the advisory board for the Dragon's Lair port over to the Nintendo DS. Get to have a lot of input about how the final game is developed, and we email each other back and forth, me and the lead developer, and get to beta test once the cartridges are made up. And then in the end, I'll get a retail copy before anybody else.
You're gonna be a daddy.
And then, of course, the big thing is Becca is due in about 4 weeks.
Ah, yes. I guess we can say that Name Your Baby contest is pretty much over, because Kerbifer, one of our regular listeners, actually guessed half of it, and we figured it's been going on so long, it's like, ah, let's just call it. So congratulations to Kerbifer, and what did he end up picking from the great Funimation booty closet?
He ended up
there
picking up Salty Ray volumes 1 through 3.
Very nice, courtesy of Funimation Entertainment. Very
courtesy
nicely
of
done. Yeah, well, courtesy of you, actually. That's true.
I had to pay the shipping, damn it.
Oh,
we'll do another show or two,
yeah,
before Becca has the kids, so I'll give people the very last-ditch effort to go ahead and try to guess the first name.
Oh, okay. All right. All right. So now we're just looking for a first name.
Just looking for the first name.
Okay, and if you're a new listener to the podcast, Otherworld Steve is going to be having a son born in just a few weeks, and this is your chance to guess the name, and if you guess it correct, you get your choice of some Funimation anime DVDs. And Steve has a huge collection still sitting in the shrink wrap, and you'll get to pick something out of that.
Yeah, I just got the Beck box a few weeks ago, and then I got Volume 2 just a couple days ago.
Ooh, yeah, the Beck box. That's big. Mongolian Chop Squad.
So there you go. That's on the list of prizes, so no excuses.
There you go. If you ever wanted to hear Greg Ayers and Johnny Bosch sing, then you want to pick up that. Okay, so let's move on with our show here. We're going to check the inbox at thebigballbroadcast@gmail.com. Stacy writes, in regards to Cultivating Hatred, the Perimeter of the Void song, which we posted a week before this show, she says, I can't find words to explain how cool that sounded, but I loved it. It made me think of What's Beyond the Gates of Hell or Zombies Rising from Their Graves at a Graveyard. So, in other words, it reminded me of the best holiday in the world, Halloween. I'm not sure if that's what you were going for, but it was great. Great job. Out of curiosity, what inspired you and Perimeter of the Void to make this song?
Whilst I appreciate the sincerity of that question, I almost want to apologize for the half-assed answer. Now, let me start by saying thank you, Stacy. If it wasn't for you, we wouldn't be doing this podcast, because you're like the only person who ever gives us feedback. And and it's always
pretty
nice to hear nice comments about the band I'm in. But at any rate, this is the most of the truth of how a Perimeter of the Void song comes together in general. My brother-in-law, Tom, gets together with our drummer, Charles Weisen-Schlitzenkopf. So Tom and Charles get together. They work out some stuff digitally on the computer and with the percussion. Just like kind of samples, little bits and pieces of a verse and chorus. Then they bring it over to my place, and I sit down with them, and I listen to what they have, and then I kind of get final say on the arrangement, so I kind of piece it together and make it a cohesive song. And then from that point, we plot out the bass and guitar, which we actually record live. And then usually after that, Tom leaves with a copy of the final song. He goes home, and about a week later, he'll come back over to my place, and we do some vocals. And that's about it.
And there you go. Audio magic.
I often ask Tom, so what's the song about? And he's like, I don't know. So as far as like what the songs are actually about, use your imagination, because the listeners probably have a better clue than we do as the makers.
So if you, Stacy, want to think that cultivating hatred is about Halloween, then so be it.
So be it. As a matter of fact, we'll just tell everybody now that that song's about Halloween.
Sounds good. Now you got a cooler story to tell. It's all about Samhain and all that stuff, all Halloween.
It's all about Glenn Danzig.
Yeah, because
he's
right.
Such a nice guy.
He's such a swell chum. Yeah, also, Stacy sent us a link to an article about anime fans downloading pirated shows via BitTorrent and getting busted. A company that distributes Japanese animated cartoons has tracked down thousands of BitTorrent users it accuses of breaching their copyrights and has successfully forced their ISPs to reveal their identities. Next step, threatening letters. Pay us $3,500 or else. We're talking about Odex, an anime distributor based in Singapore and supplies legitimate anime product to Southeast Asia. They claim a 70% loss in profit within the past 2 years. And this year, they've made it a company initiative to go after downloaders. Now, they successfully and legally forced an internet service provider, StarHub, to supply them with names of 1,000 BitTorrent users. Odex plans to send threatening letters stating they've been caught sharing anime, such as the hugely popular Bleach, which you can hear me on, and that the only alternative to being dragged through the courts is to pay a $3,000 plus fine. Not that they'll have much time to think about the next step, because Odex gives around 9 days for a response before it threatens legal action. Steven Singh, a director at Odex, has been dubbed the most hated man in Singapore's anime community, with anime fans putting up his pictures of himself and his wife, as well as personal info on the net, making wanted posters, threatening him with violence, and promising to set his house on fire. At this point, Singh has called in the police. Not Sting, by the way. Next ISP on the Odex hit list is Pacific Internet. If they win, that's another 1,000 BitTorrent users about to get threatening letters and demands for $3,000+. My gosh, that's some crazy stuff, huh? Does that put the fear of God into you about using BitTorrent?
No, because actually I'm thinking the story is nothing more than a hoax, because you and I both know firsthand, anime fans would never illegally download anime on torrent sites.
No, never.
I don't know where they make this stuff up, you know, or why they make this stuff up. It's just ludicrous.
That's right. Every single fan buys legitimate official DVDs in their respective countries and regions and supports the product 100%.
That was the other gag line in that article. Is legitimate anime from Singapore? What?
I know. You get a little Singapore bootleg. It's like, that's how you can find all of Naruto on a box set for $6. It's like, wow, you're getting quality.
The quality of the English subtitles.
But moving right along, Dai Kun, another regular listener of the show, submitted a story about UFOs as transportation devices, which are going into commercial production. Check this out. This thing seats two people. It glides about 3 meters above the ground with a top speed of about 50 miles per hour. U.S. company Moeller International has begun to manufacture parts for its Jetson-like personal flying pod, shaped like a flying saucer, called the M200G Volantor. Oh, that sounds cool. It can take off and land vertically. Company founder Dr. Paul Moeller calls the craft the ultimate off-road vehicle, as it is able to travel over any surface. He says, though, quote, "It's not a hovercraft, although its operation is just as easy," unquote. The M200G Volantor is powered by 8 rotary engines. Moeller International has not arranged for training or licensing requirements to operate the vehicle, but it is prepared to offer demo sessions at its California base once the vehicle is ready for market. The company has said the price for the M200G could start as low as $80,000, depending on the number ordered. Gee, don't you want one, Steve?
Actually, I do, because, I mean, these things have been on the drawing board since the 40s.
I have to ask, though, and the article didn't address this, what kind of fuel does it use?
Plutonium.
Yeah, that's cheap.
And real healthy.
You know, screw hybrids. We're just going to, float around in Jetson cars. 3 meters. Let's see, that's how high in feet, because I hate the metric system. I don't understand it at all.
I don't either. It can be 3 inches or 1,000 feet. I don't know.
Okay, it's not that high, but apparently at 50 miles an hour, it doesn't go that fast either. So, I don't know, $80,000 for something that kind of sort of levitates. But yeah, I mean, that thing has been, you know, in the works from the military for many decades, and, you know, top secret this, top secret that.
As tempted as I am to go into details and give you an entire historical perspective, I won't.
Maybe you should write a book about
that. There's a bunch of books about that.
Okay, yeah, there are a bunch of books about that.
My other book, though.
That's true. There's no books about that. But anyway, we're just teasing our audience. They don't know what this is about yet. But anyway, Super Tim submitted some additional Joss Whedon info from our San Diego Comic-Con laden episode from a few weeks back, or about a month or so back. Buffy fans will be happy to learn that the character Giles is the focus of a movie in development called Ripper. After Giles leaves Sunnydale, he heads back to London to experience the wacky life of being a Watcher. Also, a sequel to Serenity is possible, with distribution set up via direct-to-DVD, and the chances increase for this based on sales of the new Serenity 2-disc special edition on sale right now.
I need to go pick that up.
Shut up. You need to watch the one I gave you 2 years ago.
2.5 years ago.
Ah! Yes, evil. Okay. And finally, Graham Finch brings us scoop on a movie based on a board game. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. Although it was once a bizarre rumor, director Ridley Scott of Blade Runner and Alien fame and Gladiator has confirmed his plans to work on a movie based off the popular board game Monopoly. Speaking to the LA Times, Scott says, "Monopoly is still the most popular board game, I might be misquoting, in the world. So it's really finding the universe for that game, because clearly it ought to be humorous for the family, the funny way it brings out, particularly when your uncle suddenly gets Park Lane, and in England we have Park Lane, Mayfair, and Berkeley Square. What's it in America? Park and Madison? So you watch people change. You're witness to Jekyll and Hyde. Somewhere in that is a hysterically amusing and I think rather exciting film," unquote. I imagine he's referring to Park Place and Boardwalk, two of the most expensive and lucrative spots in the American version of Monopoly. So is this movie going to rock or just suck worse than a $2 whore?
If I shake my head anymore, I fear it's just going to fall off. I mean, really, I have been very vocal about my feelings about Hollywood and the current trend of movies, and a lot more on that later. This one here is just, it's a head shaker to end all head shakers.
Yeah, now, the only other board game movie I can think of is Clue from the 80s, which has some funny lines in it, but it didn't exactly go down in history as a classic.
And as I bitched you out about before the podcast started, Clue certainly is a classic, because it's the acting debut of Fear's lead singer Lee Ving. Fear being one of the greatest punk bands that ever existed, the only band in the world ever to get kicked off the stage live during a taping of Saturday Night Live. Definitely worth checking out, if not just to see him.
I wonder if that's on YouTube, their performance.
I'm sure it is. I'm certainly sure it is.
Awesome. All right. Well, if you want to submit your feedback, you have questions, comments, or want to submit a story just like these nice folks did, send your email to thebigballbroadcast@gmail.com. In the land of video games, got a quick release schedule. So there's some big games out this week, and you're going to go broke. We got Metroid Prime 3 for the Wii, Tiger Woods, Ultimate Duck Hunting. Hey, who doesn't want that? And for the 360, the big buzz is for BioShock. Also, Two Worlds, John Woo's Stranglehold, the big RPG Blue Dragon that Akira Toriyama of Dragon Ball Z fame had his hands in, and Dynasty Warriors Gundam. Also, you could pick up Dynasty Warriors Gundam and Tiger Woods on PS3, along with Ghost Recon Advanced Warfighter 2. DS gives you Brain Age 2. And the PSP, you get Ghost Recon Advanced Warfighter 2, Tiger Woods, and Naruto Ultimate Ninja Heroes. Yay, which you can hear me.
BioShock. Oh my god, what a game. Haven't played the demo yet. Did download the demo on Xbox Live, and as of this recording, still available on Xbox Live. I mean, this game's consistently getting 10 out of 10s from like every single review site out there. I think the lowest review I've seen this game get so far is a 9.7, so go grab the download while you can. Same being said for Blue Dragon, still available on Xbox Live. 1.5 gigabyte download, so have some time to kill. Now, the other game you mentioned, Dynasty Warrior Gundam, I checked this out on Xbox Live, and if this is what a next-gen Gundam game is, then I'm sure as hell, happy as hell, I'm not a Gundam fan.
Yeah.
This game will make you want to gouge your eyeballs out with a spork.
I did play the Japanese version at a friend's house once, and I said, "This is it? No, this is ew."
Yeah, it's a horrid PS1 style game. It's inexcusable for the strength of that franchise.
Yeah, and as big as Gundam is a franchise, they keep making these really bad games for it, and I don't know how they continue other than, oh, well, it's just a classic series. We have to honor it, so we have to keep making games for it. But they keep making crappy games for
it. Well, I mean, you know, the DBZ franchise did learn after a while, you know, when the Budokai series finally came out, and now Tenkaichi, you know, really strong titles. We dealt with quite a bit of crap for a long time. But yeah, like you said, some reason the Gundam series just consistently sucks.
Yeah, now you get Americanized titles like Armored Core or Mech Assault, and sometimes they tend to get things right, at least graphically, you know. But as far as Tiger Woods, we were also talking before we recorded about this. You'd played the demo of that and weren't too impressed.
I wasn't, and although I suck at golf in real life, I do like golf games on both the PC and the consoles. And I wasn't really impressed with the Tiger Woods golf at all. I actually have more fun playing a game like Hot Shots on the PS2 than playing Tiger Woods. And maybe it's just me. I don't know.
You just like those cutesy little character designs.
Aw. Sometimes. But I mean, no, in the end, the game mechanics really have to come through. Because if you got crappy gameplay, then the cute factor wears off really quick. So if you give me good, strong gameplay, it really doesn't matter what the graphics are like.
Indeed. Well, let's go into this story now about how to kill a PS3. Now, Steve, you don't have one. I do. It's slowly over time starting to gain its ground. It's actually, you know, a really great Blu-ray player. The demos are a lot of fun. The interface is awesome. The graphics aren't really better than Xbox 360, but, you know, it is what it is. But the big thing is the failure rate of these consoles. You know, and that's what we can discuss here in a second. So let's talk about killing a PS3.
I believe this comes to us through Engadget, although I'm not completely sure. Yeah, this series of tests was done basically in response to the complaints about the easiness, the simplicity in breaking a 360. So they decided to really put the PS3 through its paces and see what it's capable of. Now, this test consisted of continuous usage of 108 hours with absolutely zero interruption to the power supply. Games played were Resistance Fall of Man, and, Motor Storm, and Enchanted Arms. Played several different Blu-ray titles, including Casino Royale, The Departed, Pirates of the Caribbean, Terminator 2, and Superman Returns. The console was positioned on a standalone timber unit with approximately 10 centimeters of airflow underneath. And let's see, the same controllers we used throughout the testing period. Now, what they did was they did a normal environmental test with a consistent temperature of around 73 degrees. They ran the console continuously for 108 hours. And in the end, the worst thing they could say that happened during this test was that there was a slight vibration coming from the tray, which lasted approximately for 20 seconds. But for the remaining allocated time, no incidents were reported. Test number two, they actually set this thing up in the back of a freezer van. The unit itself was placed inside a closed chamber inside the van, but the controllers and the screen were mounted outside. And they also didn't think it was fair to make anybody sit inside and play for 108 hours. The temperature started at 50 degrees and was progressively scaled down over the next 4 days to reach 0 degrees. And the only incident they noticed was a slight sluggishness in playback once the temperature hit 0 degrees. And this was maintained for about 24 hours. And with about 12 hours to go, they thought it was going to crash, but in the end, it didn't. And both the PlayStation and the controller seemed to be operating fine. Now, the final test was in exact opposition to the previous test, and this is the heat sauna test, where they brought the test up gradually to about 110 degrees. Now, they admit that the console was extremely hot when they finished the test, and that it did have a slight burning smell emanating from it, but in the end, the console made it through with flying colors, and in a normal environment is working fine. I guess what they're saying is true. Between the 0.2 failure rate and these extreme tests, kind of hard to kill a PS3.
Pretty amazing. Pretty darn amazing. And despite the price cuts for PS3 and Xbox 360, Xbox is actually still ahead. And
it is.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, especially on the heels of the 360 reducing its price, strangely enough, coming at a time when Madden, the most anticipated game of every year is coming out, and Microsoft said, yes, of course, this was a plan for a long time, and that's why we didn't say anything about it during E3, because we always intended to do a price drop when Madden came out.
Huge. Yeah, that's kind of funny that you got a console that's consistently more popular than the PS3, but its failure rate is ungodly, like night and day.
Yeah, recent numbers, I believe from last week, from Microsoft, that between 1,500 to 2,500 consoles are being sent in for repair per week.
Ew.
And now you know why it's costing Microsoft over $1 billion in losses because of their faulty console.
But they do have that little new 3-year extended warranty thing going on.
And as we talked about, again, before the podcast, they also kind of snuck in an HDMI output in all the Microsoft systems without telling anybody.
That's right. So if you want to upgrade and have a full 1080p display, if your TV can handle that, then you can do so with a brand new core system or a premium system. But the thing is, the much rumored smaller, cooler, faster processors still aren't being used to manufacture the Xbox 360. So it's still kind of a big middle finger to the fans there.
I guess if it is broke, don't fix it.
Yeah, there you go. That's right. Other video game news. Fox plans to release the sequel Aliens vs. Predator on Christmas Day in theaters, and you'll get to play a version of it for your PSP. Little massive marketing tie-in. It's a third-person shooter. You'll get to play as a predator with an arsenal of exotic weaponry and equipment at your disposal. It'll give you access to advanced technologies with the Predator's wrist computer, including PredTech thermal vision modes and cloaking to track, stalk, and annihilate both humans and aliens. Both classic and completely new futuristic weapons such as wrist blades, laser trip mines, and dual shoulder cannons will give players the ability to eradicate all traces of the alien race. With co-op multiplayer modes, players will be able to team up with friends wirelessly to play as the Predator's comrades, attempting to withstand hordes of attacking aliens. That sounds pretty darn cool, although I didn't see the first film, Alien vs. Predator. I heard it was pretty bad.
I heard the same thing, and no, I didn't see it either.
And I still have no interest in seeing it, despite my love for both of those franchises separately. You think them putting together, they would have followed the Dark Horse comic, which was really a really good graphic novel series. But oh well.
And this despite your love of cheese too. I mean, you were one of the first people out the door to get in line to see Grindhouse, but not Aliens versus Predator.
Oh God, no, because that's bad. Cheese is good, but no, this is just bad. There's a fine line.
Apparently.
It's so fine, nobody can see it but me. Let's talk about movies here, since we're talking about movies and cheesiness. Let's talk about Jurassic Park 4, Jumping the Shark.
The hell, you thought they would have stopped after 3. It's official. The Jurassic Park franchise is as good as extinct. Bloody Disgusting has revealed some plot speculation for the fourth film. Now, while they say it's speculation, they do have a degree of confirmation in a lot of it. Universal Pictures has officially begun casting for Jurassic Park 4, which will film in Hawaii later this year. They confirmed that the two doctors that we're so used to seeing in all the films will not be returning. Now, here's the funny part. We're told that the film is about the government who has trained dinosaurs to carry weapons and use them for battle purposes. Now, unfortunately, this is dangerously close to Dr. Evil's shark with frickin' laser beams attached to their heads. And the only thing that could possibly make this franchise any worse is if they actually hire on Sam Jackson in the leading role. That not confirmed.
Well, Samuel Jackson was in the first movie.
That's true.
And I gotta say, 3 was kind of silly, but it was better than The Lost World, and that's kind of a sad knock, because Spielberg did direct the second one, but the third one was Joe Johnson, who comes from a special effects background, so it's kind of an interesting choice for that. But just let the series die already.
I mean, come on, especially with that premise, the government using animals as weapons. I mean, how far-fetched is that?
Exactly. Let's go from giant dinosaurs to giant robots. Now, I don't know if I've made this known, but Transformers is actually my favorite summer flick this year, and it's going to get another release theatrically, and this time it's coming to IMAX, the way it should have the first time, except Harry Potter already booked the IMAX theaters. So yeah, Paramount Pictures is bringing it out. You'll get to see Transformers bigger and better than ever, and with new footage. So the movie Transformers had a $150 million budget. The flick has grossed $633.9 million. So head to your nearest IMAX theater on September 21st. Kay, good.
It's actually really good news for me because, sadly enough, I still have not seen it. So maybe I'll make the trek out to an IMAX just to check this bad boy out.
Yeah, and obviously a movie that has done this well has probably opened the opportunity to maybe green light or get the Evangelion movie a little further along, right? You know, we got giant robots battling each other. Hello.
Well, I mean, you know, everybody knows that Transformers has already been greenlit for a sequel. What a lot of people may not know is that when they allowed it to be greenlit for a sequel, they also included part three in that franchise option. So it's pretty much confirmed we're going to get a trilogy of Transformer movies.
Also another, I guess you could say it's an annoying trend in Hollywood to make everything a trilogy.
It is. And again, you know, I think we have Lucas to thank for that, for really bringing trilogy into the lexicon. And I don't think it's a good thing necessarily.
Mm-hmm. Now, if you're watching Cartoon Network in the middle of the night or something, perhaps you've seen Voltron. Well, believe it or not, Hollywood has greenlit that to be another live-action movie adaptation. And quite frankly, I'm scared.
So am I. But I guess only to a certain degree. And the reason I say that is because Voltron is another property that's very similar to Transformers. It does have a large viewing base. I wouldn't necessarily call them a fan base because I never really met anybody rabid over Voltron. But certainly a lot of people have seen the show. You know what you're talking about when you mention Voltron. Go Lions! But anyway, it's an interesting premise to bring to the big screen, especially on the heels of Transformers. But I think in the pit of our stomachs, we all understand it's not going to be another Transformers. You're not going to have ILM working on this thing. You're not going to have a $300 million budget for this thing. It's just not going to happen. I think they're going to make it very campy, like the animated series, and in the end, it's going to be like almost B-movie quality. That's just my prediction. I could be proven wrong, but I don't see another giant robot movie coming out and being up to the same caliber as Transformers.
Right, and I can see that, and, you know, again, it makes me look like a hypocrite because, yes, I embrace B-movies. I love B-movies. My favorite thing in my collection right now is the new Savior of the Universe edition of Flash Gordon. Hello.
Oh.
But boom, 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 boom. But yeah, you know, Voltron, it is an anime. It's an old-school anime, and many things that are anime, I don't think can make that cross over into live action. Yeah, I could be wrong. I mean, Death Note is a huge anime, and it's got a live action movies, and those are wildly popular. I haven't seen them. I can't judge them. But I don't know. You know, some things are better left in their original form.
I agree, and I think that's why we haven't got the Dragon Ball Z movie. I know that's why we didn't get the Akira movie. Evangelion, as mentioned earlier, still kind of up in the air, and no word from Weta or ADV about how that's progressing. We got G-Savior from the Gundam universe, which was absolutely appalling. So, yeah, I mean, I think anime is one of those properties that's really, really difficult to translate into the American live-action market. And, again, I think with Voltron, you're going to have a cult following that might actually go out to the theater to see it, but it's not going to be anything big. It's probably going to be a very forgetful film.
Yeah, it'll probably make a little more movie money than, like, Blood Rain or something. But
that's saying a lot.
It is, and Blood Rain actually has a sequel. Go figure. But anyway, another trend in Hollywood, of course, is the remake. We're talking about Fantastic Voyage now. If you know some old school classic sci-fi, this is from 1966. It had Raquel Welch looking hot, Donald Pleasance, and some other people. I don't remember who. But yeah, it's a sci-fi classic, Fantastic Voyage, about a scientist who is dying of a blood clot, and his only chance for survival is for five scientist colleagues to be miniaturized in a ship and injected into his bloodstream. Now, a more comedic take on that premise was done in the 80s in a movie called Inner Space with Martin Short and Dennis Quaid. Now, this new version, believe it or not, will be helmed by Roland Emmerich. If you don't know the name, you know the movies. Such memorable Hollywood suckfest as Independence Day, The Day After Tomorrow, and Godzilla. Now, Emmerich's current epic, 10,000 BC, is about to hit theaters. The script will be penned by Marianne and Cormac Wibberly, who wrote National Treasure, a huge hit for Disney. Now, this new version of Fantastic Voyage is a co-production between Roland Emmerich's Centropolis Entertainment and James Cameron's Lightstorm Entertainment. So I have a feeling this will have some nice eye candy, but on the whole will just be another suck fest.
It's sounding more and more like that with every passing sentence.
Yeah, I mean, have you seen the trailer to 10,000 BC?
No, I can't say that I have.
It looks like Apocalypto with a lot more CG in it.
Yay, because we all know it's prettier with CG.
That's right. When in doubt, throw some CG in there. Yeah, that's cool. We need a giant running mastodon. Okay, ready, go.
Oh, and speaking of remaking suckfests, this is actually quite the embarrassment to somebody old like you and me, Kyle. But Bruce Lee's classic 1973 film Enter the Dragon will be remade by Warner Brothers. The remake, to be titled Awaken the Dragon, will be written and directed by Kirk Sutter, producer of the S.H.I.E.L.D. TV series, and will be released by Warner Independent Pictures. In an email Thursday to the Associated Press, Warner Brothers publicist Laura Kim said the movie will tell the story of an FBI agent who investigates a Shaolin monk and underground kung fu fight clubs. I know, I had to stop there and shake my head.
Rule number one, do not talk about underground kung fu fight clubs.
So, yeah, in a nutshell, Enter the Dragon, remade, going into production, coming up at Warner Brothers. Don't go see it theatrically.
Let's see, who will they use? Tony Ja or something? Or are they going to bring Jet Li out again? Or
yeah, what's up with Jet Li? I just saw a movie trailer today for a Jet Li movie, and I thought he was done with martial arts movies.
No, it keeps cranking him out. Yeah, War with Jason Statham. So,
and the last movie that came out in the trailer is Jet Li's final martial arts movie appearance.
No, really. or not. Yeah.
Maybe. A
little strange. Now, I didn't really see any Bruce Lee films, but I do remember seeing at least, you know, channel surfing one night and seeing Chuck Norris in his youth fighting Bruce Lee, but I don't think that was the movie. I think, hey, that's be cool. Let's have Chuck Norris show up in this remake.
No, the greatest fight scene ever is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar fighting Bruce Lee. And it's in one of the movies, I forget which one, but nothing like watching this, you know, 7'9" African-American fighting this 5'3" little Asian dude. He was actually one of Bruce Lee's students. And one thing I learned, staying up late at night and watching A&E biography, when Bruce Lee was living in Hollywood, he actually had quite a few celebrity students. And I know he and Chuck Norris had sparred before competitively, so the fight scene in the movie, they kind of weren't doing the stuntman glancing blows. Some, you know, little jabs get snuck in from time to time.
Now, and here I was thinking Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's only film role to date was Airplane.
I'm thinking a lot of kids listen to podcasts going, Air what?
Yeah, I know. What's Airplane? What's Kareem Abdul-Jabbar? Who's Bruce Lee?
Yeah, what's a Bruce Lee? Is that a manga?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, my goodness gosh. Well, we're coasting right along, and now let's talk about tech. All right, let's talk about the iPhone. It made its big splash. It made its big debut. People lined up for hours and around the block, and yet the next day you could still go in and get one. Is it a hit? Yeah, pretty much. Apple has pretty much, fairly closely hit a home run with the iPhone, despite it's not being as feature-laden as it should be. There's a lot of tweaks that need to be addressed, but apparently some technical issues, too. And let's address that issue right now.
Okay, now, apparently, this is no longer being considered an isolated and rare defect. This is, I guess, starting to happen to iPhones kind of abroad. But apparently, it's a syndrome called dead strip, and it has to do with use of the touchpad. Apple bought the rights to the screen technology for the iPhone from a Finnish firm. Now, the Finnish firm is reporting that the usage led to the same unresponsive display problems for some time. Apparently, after 3 to 6 months of extensive use, it started to degrade the technology and cause a loss of sensitivity to touch inputs. This suggests that relatively new iPhone fleet in the US could start to exhibit the same problems within time. Now, of course, with new technologies such as advanced multi-touch and production volume being large, certain faults were expected to crop up, but this looks like to be a very serious hardware defect indeed.
Yeah, that whole touchpad thing was the deal killer for me because of that whole keypad deal. I just want to type. I want to be able to type fast. I'm able to do it on a Sidekick, but the iPhone, not so much. Slows you way down.
Yeah, now apparently if you touch your iPhone a little too much, you're going to break it.
Yeah, that makes sense. Although I thought it went through a lot of endurance tests and it could at least hold up to like scratches and
everything. Well, now again, you know, it sounds a little conspiratorial because the company that developed the technology did admit that this was a problem and it was an ongoing problem during the development of the technology. So, you know, I guess the question is just how much did Apple know and how quick were they to rush this product out the door knowing that was going to happen?
Hmm, man, I do know a lot of people who own an iPhone, and I mean to kind of, you know, play 20 questions with them and say, are they happy? Kind of do a check-in. It's like, of course, the day they got it, it's like, oh, it's the greatest thing since sliced bread. But now they've had a month or two to play with it. It's like, okay, all right, now that the hype is starting to fade, how do you really feel about
and
it?
Not having one, I don't know. YouTube wants to depose Stephen Colbert and Jon Stewart. So let's see how funny those two will be on the witness stand. The two comedians are apparently being dragged into a copyright fight between their employer and Google. Let's see, Viacom, the company behind Jon Stewart's Daily Show and the Colbert Report, filed a $1 billion lawsuit against Google last year, alleging that Google and YouTube encourage users to pirate copyright material. Two companies entered the names of people they each wanted to depose in court, according to documents filed within the U.S. District Court of New York last week. And Google, who acquired YouTube last year, wants to depose at least 30 people in addition to Colbert and Stewart, and among them are Viacom chairman Summer Redstone and CEO Philippe Dahmen. Now, Google attorneys could argue that the comedians, that being Colbert and Stewart, and the producers of the show, had made public statements that are very relevant. Now, for example, about a year ago, Colbert urged fans to make him a viral video star. The comedian stood before a green screen on a show and played with a lightsaber. He encouraged fans to fill in the background and add in their own videos and submit them to the show. This could go to determining non-infringing uses, Lavick said, which is the attorney. Said if Viacom used the clips for marketing and promotional purposes, Google could argue that Colbert needs to be deposed. So the question, I guess, right now is whether or not the people who are on Comedy Central, on these shows owned by Viacom, are actually encouraging the illegal/pirated use of videos on said server.
Yeah, because Viacom made a huge pull or push, however you want to say, to have YouTube remove all their content that was showing up on there. And yeah, that's bizarre. Boy, all I could think is just like lawyers. Friggin' lawyers.
But you know, I don't know if you saw it, but the Colbert Green Screen Challenge, as they called it, was freaking awesome because ILM actually made a submission. And it was freaking hilarious. I mean, they actually had George Lucas on as, like, the submitter of the video. And, you know, he treated him like a contestant. He's like, so, George, you know, what did you bring us for your tape or whatever? But look it up on YouTube, dare I say it, because it's awesome. I mean, this thing was totally 100% done up by ILM. It's freaking incredible. But, you know, it does beg that question because, you know, when Colbert did this competition, this challenge, he was making this clip available to the public, or certainly encouraging the clip to take it in some way, shape, or form, download it, and then put it up on the internet. So it does make for a very strange argument, even though the company is saying we don't want pirated or downloaded clips on there. What do you do when the host of the show says take this clip, download it, blah blah blah?
Speaking of George Lucas, rumbles are that Disney is looking to expand George Lucas's presence in their theme parks. Now, if you've been to Disney World's MGM Studios, which will soon be retitled Hollywood Studios, you can see the Indiana Jones stunt show and Star Tours, which is a 3D virtual flight simulator. Apparently, not only will that subdivision of the theme park be getting that new name, Hollywood Studios, they're going to be getting an upgrade on Star Tours 2.0. This is in the works, as well as plans for dining areas that are themed around Indiana Jones and Star Wars. Now, I'm kind of shocked that the cantina has never been used as a restaurant theme, but oh well, you know, maybe they could serve the blue milk that Luke drinks. So, yeah, this new Lucas expansion is expected to be officially announced next year and go live in 2009. In related news, Disney are in preliminary talks to express interest in acquiring rights to the newly in development live-action Star Wars TV series. Now, of course, since Fox put out and distributed all the Star Wars films, Fox is also trying to persuade Lucas to say, hey, let us pick up your series. So I'm not sure how that's going to fall. I mean, what do you think, Steve? I mean, is it going to be a bad thing if Disney picked it up? Are you worried about the show being watered down at all?
No, not really. Not really, because I mean, let's face it, Disney's been a bit edgy in their films. You know, I think of like Beauty and the Beast, where, you know, you got arrow play and you see blood. Look at the end of Tarzan, where although shown in silhouette, you do get to see a guy get hung. And Star Wars is a very powerful franchise. You know, I think right now it's just a matter of dollar signs, with Disney saying there's the potential to make, you know, $1 billion off this through distribution and whatever, and they're willing to sign with a partnership with Lucasfilm over it. I'm fine with that, because I think we're going to get the Star Wars vision regardless. I think this is something that they've been working on, at least in the script phase, for a long time. And I really can't see a company like ILM, Lucasfilm, saying, oh, well, we got to bend to the wills of Disney.
This whole Lucas presence in the parks thing, I mean, that's been there for over 15 years. And there were rumbles that, oh, yeah, the Star Tours thing is going to be episode one themed, you know, back in 99. I mean, wow, that was 8 years ago. And we've been waiting on an update all this time. And is it going to happen? It's like, I don't know. I don't know if that would make, the Disney theme park any cooler or any better. I mean, they do have Star Wars Day pretty often there.
I will say this. When Beck and I get married, we honeymooned in Disney. And it was during Star Wars weekends. And it just was a coincidence. We certainly didn't plan it that way. We're not that geeky. But I think it really enhanced the experience, because I hadn't been to Disney in a long time, and to go there and have the Disney experience and the Star Wars experience simultaneously, you know, it's like, ooh, geekgasm.
Yeah, as a lifelong Star Wars fan, I would want to see, a bigger presence than it is. Star Tours, it's fun, but it doesn't really 100% feel like Star Wars to me. It feels like a Disney-fied version, which makes sense because it's Disney. I don't know. Does it just reek of oversaturation in the marketplace? Because I used to, collect the action figures, and then it got to a point where it's just ludicrous. It's like, okay, it's overkill. I don't need an 18,000th version of Anakin wrapped in bacon or something.
No, I kind of do agree, because we're at a really weird point in Star Wars and pop culture right now, because we know that the films are done. Theatrical release films are done. But we're still anticipating a whole bunch more Star Wars. We got the new Clone Wars animated series. We have the television series. We have, hopefully one day, the huge box set of all the movies with all the extras we've been dying for in a nice HD format. So, it is ironic that since the movies are done, the franchise is bigger and more saturating than ever.
Well, let's talk about our favorite band, ha ha ha, Metallica. You know, they've made some huge missteps in their career, virtually pissing off their entire fan base with the whole Napster debacle in the late 90s. And then, they seem poised to do it all over again.
You know, I have to start by saying it's ironic to say, now our favorite band and then snicker, because, for better or worse, for a long time, they were everybody's favorite band. But my, how the times have changed. Attorneys for Grammy award-winning heavy metal band Metallica filed a lawsuit last week against Harmonix and Activision, who recently acquired Red Octane, for copyright infringement. The suit accuses the three gaming companies of illegally distributing copies of Metallica songs in the upcoming and highly anticipated game Guitar Hero 3 and Rock Band, both due out in late 2007. The suit alleges that both companies plan to package and distribute Metallica music through their video games in what lawyers characterized as License Music to Player System, or LM2P, network. Metallica is fearful that album sales could decline if their fans were able to simply walk into GameStop or Best Buy and purchase an $80 video game that contained one of their songs. Just as the sting of the whole Lars Ulrich versus Napster debacle was starting to kind of go away, the open gaping wound has kind of turned into a bruise, and they just really want to reopen that sucker so bad.
Yeah, and it's not even a new song. It's one from And Justice for All, which was 1991. Metallica fans already own this song.
Now, what's a little confusing about this lawsuit and the limited amount of information we have at it right now is if this suit is being brought by the band or just by the attorneys, because nowhere in the article are there any quotes from band members, specifically Lars and his big mouth. So if it's something being brought up strictly by the attorneys, something Metallica is not directly involved in, maybe it's something, where the contract was written sketchy or whatever, then, maybe if they came out with something publicly and smoothed it over, it could be fine. But if it's just being brought about by Metallica themselves, it's kind of shady.
What would you give to talk to their new bassist, Robert Trujillo? It's like, what do you think about this dude?
You know what? I don't think he thinks about it. You know, you and I were talking a couple weeks ago about watching, what is it, Some Kind of Monster, the documentary. And, you know, Robert got accepted into the band after their extensive tryouts and everything, and he's got to sit down with the band and management, and they gave him $1 million up front to sign with them. He was waived of all previous expenses by the band, any previous contractual obligations or whatnot. So he came into Metallica free and clear with $1 million in the bank. I think he just nods his head and says, yep, whatever. I'm here to make money.
Who'd have thought?
No, I mean, seriously. I mean, I'm not even being a dick about it. So I think you're in Metallica, for God's sake. You're going to make money. Shut your mouth, nod your head, do what you're told, and you're going to be freaking filthy rich, you know? That's unavoidable. Well, I shouldn't say unavoidable, because since he's been in the band, they've done nothing but crank out garbage. Even more reason to have a song, even if it's a lame song like One, on a game like Guitar Hero or Rock Band, because you're getting your product out there when it was decent, and people who are just turning onto it now just might go out and pick up those albums.
That's right. Well, you know, it is a controversial subject, and, you know, we do want to encourage our listeners to let us know what they feel about this. You know, Metallica being just total dicks, or do they have any leg to stand on here? I mean, seriously, we want to hear your argument for or against this at thebigbaldbroadcast@gmail.com. Now, this next story, before we get into the reasons why it's great to be a guy, this one is, wow. Okay, 17-year-old overdoses on coffee.
This is one that really touched near and dear to me, and it makes me reconsider my caffeine ingestion. Teenage waitress overdosed on caffeine after drinking 14 shots of espresso. Ugh, my stomach curdles at the thought. Jasmine Wills, 17 years old, could hardly breathe when she was taken to a hospital with high temperature and heart palpitation. She had drunk almost 3 times the recommended daily amount of caffeine in just 4 hours. She's a student working part-time at her father's recently opened sandwich shop, and she began to binge on coffee last Wednesday after getting 5 hours sleep the night before. She said that it had done the trick for her one time before, and it seemed to be working great, so she just kept drinking and felt like she could take on the world. And then she said later on, her nerves were jangled, tears were streaming down her face, people kept asking her if she was all right. And then she gets to the point the following morning that she couldn't feel her lips and was struggling to breathe. She said she was drenched and burning up and hyperventilating. She was having palpitations, and her heart was beating so fast she thought she was going into shock. So she went to the hospital. They said, you dumb bitch, what the hell were you thinking?
And, is that a quote?
No. No, but she did say that she's been feeling exhausted, you know, days afterward, and she can't even bear the sight of coffee right now. And it's kind of ironic because her dad says that, you know, he was just there to help out, and she had come on the 8 a.m. shift, and that she usually doesn't drink coffee at all, not even instant, but he had just installed a beautiful new coffee machine, and so she thought she'd try an espresso. Again, I guess all things in moderation, because daddy bought an espresso machine doesn't mean let's take this thing out for a test drive.
Too true. My God. And I always think every time I walk into a Starbucks, I'm going to see some guy whose eyes are about to pop out of his head because he's so addicted.
I'm laughing because I didn't know there was a recommended daily dose of caffeine. I'm down to about 8 cups of coffee a day, so I think that's pretty good.
That's awesome. All right. Well, we're running long, kids. So we're going to end this show with just a few reasons why it's great to be a guy. Now, we don't mean this to be sexist in any way. And if you are a female listener of the show, please feel free to submit some reasons why it's great to be a girl. But since I can't comment on that because I'm a guy and Steve's a guy, and I'm pretty sure most of our listeners are guys, we were just kind of going for the main demographic here. So, we're just going to go back and forth and rattle off some reasons why it's great to be a guy. One reason, phone conversations are over in 30 seconds flat.
Movie nudity is virtually always female.
You know stuff about tanks.
A 5-day vacation requires only one suitcase.
This one's for you, Steve. I'm like the rare exception here, but Monday Night Football.
Oh, yeah. You don't have to monitor your friends' sex lives.
You can open all your own jars.
Old girlfriends don't give a crap whether you've lost or gained weight.
When clicking through the channels, you don't have to stall at every shot of somebody crying.
Your butt is never a factor in job interviews.
Here's a big one. All your orgasms are real.
A beer gut doesn't make you invisible to the opposite sex.
You can go to the bathroom without a support group.
Here's another big one. You can kill your own food.
And another big perk here. The garage is all yours.
This is just a weird one. With 400 million sperm per shot, you could double the Earth's population in 15 tries. Well, at least in theory.
You never have to clean a toilet.
You can be showered and ready to go in 10 minutes.
Woohoo! Wedding plans take care of themselves.
If someone forgets to invite you to something, he or she will still be your friend.
Your underwear is $10 for a 3-pack.
Here's what I'm really grateful for. You don't have to shave below your neck.
Amen! You can eat a banana in a hardware store.
Ooh. That's the one we're going to get emails over. You can sit with your knees apart no matter what you're wearing.
You can quietly watch a game with your buddy for hours without ever thinking, he must be mad at me.
The world is your urinal.
And finally, a reason you should be happy you're a guy. Someday, you'll be a dirty old man.
I'm trying to figure out when someday is, because I already feel like one.
yes, we're already there. Okay, that completes the Big Ball Broadcast. Thank you so much for downloading. Listen up close to the ending credits. Maria will tell you how to get in touch with the show, various ways. And we do, of course, strongly encourage you to do so. So, until next time, this is Kyle Hebert.
And this is Otherworld Steve.
See ya!
Visit our official blog page at bigballbroadcast.blogspot.com. Donations are graciously accepted and appreciated. Please email us at thebigballbroadcast@gmail.com. Additional announcements by Maria Vu. Remember to stay geeky!
That was totally wicked!